So I've moved on here to four. And four, the first part of the clip is actually the AMF arm doing the so-called copy demo, which was the big goal, supposedly. And then that was Gosper's programming, largely. Then we go to the second clip, which is this on-screen simulation of Schirdlew. And this also...
So this is on film four.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right. You can see here that it simulates on the 340 a very simple arm that can kind of comes down and sticks to the cube and picks up and has a number of cubes here. And you can say, pick up the red cube and put it on top of the blue cube or one thing or another. And it knows that you can't put things on pyramids. It's actually fairly smart in its way here. The English language, it says, find a block which is taller than the one which you're holding and put it into the box. So it can do quite a bit there. That was pretty impressive in its way. Okay, then let's see, this is more Schirdlew. Another clip of Schirdlew, yeah. Okay, now here we go with some chess. Now, at this next clip, we're seeing the...
This is still part of four.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the first thing we see here is the Model 35 teletype. And this was the main console input of the PDP-6.
Right.
And then here he's sitting, and there's the 340. There it is, what we're talking about. And it's set up for chess here. We've got chess on the screen in here. And the person here is Alan Baisley. And Alan Baisley... is another long history. He was a very strong chess player and unfortunately had some medical problems and whatever, which is a long story.
Okay, let me interrupt you for just a minute. Kotak, of course, is here.
Yeah.
He's accessible to me.
Yeah.
He showed up in that little clip. Is he also knowledgeable about this whole run?
Not very much. No, he isn't. He just happened to be visiting that day, and we caught him on clip. He was not actually part of us. He was around the Model Railroad Club in those days. I knew him well, and so forth. But in this function here, he was just sort of paying a visit to the customer, having recently delivered his machine.
Fine, but don't go down that rat hole. Just for your own information, have you talked to Alan lately?
A couple weeks ago.
He gets very heavy into organs, into pipe organs.
I didn't.
Okay.
We didn't discuss that, so I didn't know that. Yeah.
Chess
okay.
Playing.
So this is chess playing, and this is Baisley sitting, and they're playing my chess program. This is MacHack. Chess program, it's just showing a little bit of the operation. Now here is another shot of the console.
Since it's your program, since they're playing it, 1968.
Well, in the 65, it could have. This is in PDP-6 era, so it's pretty early. I think it's probably 65 or 66 kind of era. Now here we see a shot of the console area from the other side. So here's Baisley still sitting at the 35.
Right.
The type 340 is here right immediately to the right, the extreme right of the thing and barely visible at all on the screen.
Okay.
Then we see the actual console area itself. Here's the lights and switches the machine had here.
Yeah.
And then here are the deck tapes, these little deck tapes.
Yeah.
Each of these deck tapes held 64K words of 36-bit words.
It was actually a non-sequential device. Was the other peculiarity of it?
It was addressable. That's right. You could write in the middle, which you couldn't on others.
The tape of the time.
That's right. That's right. Okay, and
I imagine in addition to the deck tape up here, which is a magnetic medium, there's probably a paper tape running somewhere on the teletype.
The paper tape was built into the processor here, so we can barely see it actually. Just to the left of the lower microtape is the 400 character per second paper tape reader, And then this item here, just to the left of the upper maintenance panel here, yeah, is the Burpee 60 character per second paper tape punch. And those were both built in to the PDP-6. And they were very similar to the corresponding items,
so
which are on the PDP.
The punch is an out, so the computer is using punch tape output.
And input.
And input.
Yeah, in an earlier, at this era, it looks like we were on microtape. I mean, in the very earliest days of the PDP-6, of course, the microtape software wasn't ready. So in that case, we were completely based on paper tape.
And when you're saying microtape, that's not the same as deck tape, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's exactly the same. There was a copy mark dispute, and deck had to rename it. There was somebody else that copyrighted that word or something.
Okay,
yeah, there's a light here which is sort of preventing us from seeing the other pair of microtapes. This machine had a total of 6 microtape drives in pairs. Deck tape drives, again, the same thing.
Okay.
And this right here is just a blank panel where the...
This is all still in the chess playing.
That's right, this is. And since we get a shot of it here, we should probably take advantage of it to just describe. Now the going on here to the left from the console part of the processor is two whole bays, which are the processor. This next bay here, immediately to the left, is the central processor itself. And then the next thing is the fast accumulators, a whole bay worth that is 16 registers, which was the fast accumulators.
Uh-huh.
And then further, and then the next two bays here are the memory that came with the machine from DEC. This was 16K of 36-bit words. Cost $120,000.
Wow.
And then, sitting out here at the far end of the line, is the Fabrotech Mobi memory. And we just get a little view of that. It's very likely that at this time, this Mobi memory wasn't working. It's another long story where it took a couple of years, or at least a year and a half, to get it to work after it was delivered. It later, however, became very reliable and was very central to our whole operation of the lab for many years. It was 256K of 40-bit words, of which 36 could be used, and it cost $385,000 from Fabrotech. It was. Well, that's its name. That's what we called it, and Mobi is in Moby Dick, sort of a large and has some other connotation too. Yeah.
So you guys designed it?
No, we bought it. But it was a very special purchase. At a very certain particular time. The Office of Naval Research and ARPA and predecessors and so forth who were funding all this stuff came up with some extra money.
Okay.
So they said, okay, MIT and Stanford, we've got $400,000,
okay,
and you each get $400,000 to do something with. So basically we took this $400,000 and contracted to get this Mobi memory.
And the company again was
Fabrotech. 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 They were making this was a core memory. You know, it was made of little donuts, and its big feature was that it was a two-wire core memory. In other words, most core memories of the day had 4 wires going through each of those individual tiny cores.
Right. Okay.
And this memory with somewhat more elaborate electronics managed to work having only 2 wires.
Uh-huh.
going through the core. So that made it, of course, much easier to have small cores and have a lot of them, okay, and string it. So that's...
So now, in the way in which the thing is that the core is holding a magnetization running one way or the other way.
Yeah.
And so what you're doing is you're reading it with one wire and you're writing it with the other wire.
No, it's more complicated than that.
Oh, never mind.
But basically, yeah.
Okay.
But the conventional core, you see, this memory, so the ratio of prices we can see. In other words, this memory on the end here was 16K of memory. It cost $120,000. And this is 256K.
No, 40-bit words instead of 32-bit words.
36. The PDP-6 is a 36-bit machine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it had parity as well, so it was actually 37.
So this is a 40-bit. Now, this guy is using 3 bits to do something with the two-wire thing, or what?
No, the 2 bits were unused. For almost all purposes. Actually, they were wired up, and there was very few things. But
your point is that we're getting
16 times as much memory.
Times as much for twice as much money.
Or three times as much money. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, okay. So anyway, that is the Moby memory. Okay, and then. He goes on and plays a little bit of a game here, and that's it. Okay, so let's now go on
now,
to clip
memory,
number five.
Was your program to do chess?
Yeah.
All this memory was essential for.
Of course, there's different errors and one thing that.
Yeah.
No,
is this guy eating up the whole machine when he's playing chess?
It looks like we probably were. Of course, that was the thing. There was this one machine for the whole laboratory, and in the earliest days, it was used by one user who was actually sitting there manipulating the switches, you know, start and stop on the switches.
Yeah, so the story of being able to hear the machine and hear errors in the code as the thing goes by. I don't know whether or not it's true, but.
Well, there was a music interface, so the way you could hear it was that the lights would be connected to this audio amplifier, and depending on what's happening.
No, he tells a funny story, but what he's talking about is that in the switching of the machine itself, if you were sitting here late at night, you could hear sometimes that you had made an error in your code.
Well, you can hear it. It's the same thing, I think. Although it's a music interface, you see, the music interface consists of simply hanging an audio amplifier off of the light driver.
Okay.
So, depending upon what's going on, there may very well be...
Really coming out acoustically, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.